I'm here with Sarah Alexson from the University of Colorado Medical School. She got her bachelor's degree here at Kalamazoo College, and now you're in your first year of med school at the University of Colorado, is that right?
Yes.
So talk about the research that you do for the University of Colorado.
Well, right now I'm just beginning a project about suicide prevention at University of Colorado for a longitudinal project that we all have to do. So it doesn't really follow up that well with my research at University of Michigan, but it's just another interest that I have.
How exactly did you get into this study about Mary Ingalls?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. So I began working at the University of Michigan with Dr. Beth Torini on cystic fibrosis research. And during that project, we were just starting out and there was a few lulls. And so Beth came into my office one day with this big old box and kind of set it down on my desk and said, "Are you looking for something else to do on your free time?" And said something about Little House on the Prairie. And I kind of thought, what is this about? But I thought, this is interesting. I'll check it out. So from then on, I just kind of became the detective and was looking through all of Laura Ingalls' old memoirs and just kind of following her journey to find all of this information for this project.
So did you hear exactly how Beth got into this at all?
Yes. So when Beth was in medical school, which was about 10 years ago, she was on her rotation for the pediatrics rotation, and she asked one of her attendings when they were looking at a patient who had gone blind, she said, "Can't scarlet fever make you go blind?" And her attending kind of stopped and looked at her and said, "I don't think so." And Beth was like, "Well, it was in the books. It was in the Little House on the Prairie books. That's how Mary went blind." And so from then on, she kind of made it her goal to figure out what was going on there. But she had never had the opportunity when she was busy in med school. So then when I came along, she finally had the chance to, you know, pull all the pieces together.
So what was it like looking through all of these old, you know, newspapers and all these records and things like this?
It was really exciting. It was like going back in time because, well, first we read the books, just the Little House books, and got that piece. And then I just found on a couple of places references to Laura's memoirs, which is called Pioneer Girl. And it's actually going to be published next year, I think, by someone in South Dakota that's working on transcribing that. But so I tracked that down, which was kind of hard because it's not in print. It's just, you know, her handwritten pages. And then I found in that she was talking about how it had been some sort of spinal sickness. And she'd actually crossed out the word meningitis and written sickness above it. And so that really got me going. I was like, oh my gosh, history has been changed. She crossed it out. And so then from then on, I just kept finding more and more things. I was dusting off these books from like the 1890s in the medical library, looking at what they used to call scarlatina, which was scarlet fever, and how you could have all these kidney problems with it and everything, and just kept putting together the pieces. It was like following a trail through each town that she lived in too, because I would call all of these different historical societies and say, "Well, what do you have on Mary?" And they would get really excited that someone was looking into it, and they would send me everything they had. For example, Iowa College of the Blind sent me all of her old records, all of her old transcripts, and like what grade she got. She got all A's. So that was an important clue for us because it let us know that the blindness didn't affect her mental functioning. So once we knew that, we could rule out like a bacterial meningitis, which usually ravages the brain, as opposed to the viral meningitis, which is what we kind of came more to in our hypothesis.
So, what is scarlet fever?
So, it's a funny thing. It's actually just strep throat with a rash. It's just a different manifestation of a streptococcal disease. And that was really interesting for me to find out from Beth. It was kind of my first introduction to medicine with her telling me these things. And I thought, wow, it sounds a lot worse than that, being called scarlet fever.
And a lot of people did die from this in the 1800s, isn't that right?
Yes. It used to be much more virulent than it was today. Something changed with the bacteria that caused it to be less virulent. It wasn't necessarily the antibiotics, because through the records we found that nationally scarlet fever deaths went down before the use of antibiotics. So it's just not as virulent today.
That's an interesting thing all in itself. So what led you to believe that it wasn't scarlet fever?
Well, we consulted an ophthalmologist on our paper, Jerry, and he told us that he's looked through a lot of things, and it's very hard to find an ocular manifestation of scarlet fever. If it were to, you know, somehow get into the eye, it would have caused a lot of external damage, and you would be able to tell that that person had had scarlet fever. And but I mean, needless to say, there's no recorded things of this actually happening. So a lot of things we were able to rule out due to the fact that in Laura's book, she wrote that Mary's eyes were still beautiful, they were blue, and you couldn't tell anything from the outside that her eyes had had this problem. It was just a mostly internal kind of manifestation.
So basically, if she had gone blind from scarlet fever, which is not even really possible, there would have been some kind of rash on the eye.
Yeah, you would see kind of more lesions out there.
So, if it's not scarlet fever, what is it?
So, we think the most likely possibility is meningoencephalitis, which is just an inflammation or infection of the tissues surrounding the brain and spinal cord. And due to the eye and the optic nerve being so closely intertwined with that is what led us to believe that that would be the most near association. And there's many different ways you can acquire a viral meningitis. You can get it from a virus. You can get it from the herpes simplex virus, which is just anything simple as cold sores, if the virus happens to get into your eye. Or you could get it from Lyme disease, ticks, mosquitoes, different vectors that will bear a virus that can go into your meninges.
So did you do any research to see how common this was in the 1800s, this kind of brain infection?
Yeah, it actually, so when we were looking through the most common types of blindness, what they could stem from, we were looking through the census reports in the 1890s, and there, the top four causes of blindness were brain fever, which was the old term for a meningitis, encephalitis. There was also scarlet fever was on the top four, and other diseases of the brain and head that was on there. So they didn't really have that great of a way of categorizing different diseases back then, because A, they didn't have bacterial culture, or they didn't even know what a virus was. They just, you know, doctors performed a much different function back then, just more palliative care and helping people not be in pain.
Let's do this and then see if it works.
Yeah. That was a really interesting part of the project for me, because I just, you know, assumed that we knew more.
How common is this today? This, you know, brain infections like this?
Well, for viral meningitis, I'd say it's fairly common, but we do have a vaccine against meningococcal diseases, which I think most people need to have to go to college. However, recently there was a student at Kalamazoo College who just died from a bacterial meningitis, which is very different than a viral. The bacterial can be much more lethal. But I don't think it's too common these days, but when it does come around, I think that the central nervous system is very susceptible to these kind of insults, and, you know, they can be very, very lethal.
So did you read the books before doing this project?
Yeah, I read them as a kid. We have a little set in my basement at my parents' house, I think. So, yeah, I read them a long time ago, and then I needed to refresh my memory when we were working on this project. So I kind of had a little stack of Mary and Laura books all on my desk, and it was kind of fun to read through those. I would sometimes get a little carried away and keep reading.
So when you think about medical research, this isn't something that I usually think about. You know, going back and doing these sort of historical cold case files, you know, what was it like telling people what you were doing?
It really varied the responses that we would get. A lot of people in our office kind of gave us the, why are you doing this? kind of speech. But a lot of people have been interested along the way, too. There's been a lot of really fervent Laura fans. And I think that even if it isn't, like, important for, like, some cutting-edge treatment or something like that, I think it's important for American history just to know what kind of challenges our forefathers faced in, like, their pioneer days, and just knowing what they went through. And I think it also guides medicine today just to know the cultural associations that people do have with these illnesses. A big thing that Dr. Trini has run into is in her pediatric practice, when she will tell a parent, your child has scarlet fever, she gets a very different response than if she tells them that your child has strep throat with a rash. And so I think that even though this paper is about a historical case, it really brings light to physicians in how we use language and how we associate a disease like scarlet fever with what's happened in the past. And so if people read in a book to their kids, they're going to, you know, have these associations with, oh my gosh, it's going to cause my kid blindness. And even if we know rationally that can't happen, you still have that association.
So what does this mean for the Laura Ingalls Wilder books?
Well, we've been really sensitive about this because we don't want it to come across as Laura was wrong or anything like that. I think that it was a really important literary device that she used, because when we would look back through the stuff, she, all of her old memoirs, didn't say scarlet fever until the very end. And so what we are guessing is that it was really an editing thing, because she had sent it to the editors like about three times. There's three different copies that we looked through of Pioneer Girl. And then they decided towards the end, oh, we're going to make this a children's book. We're not going to make this like an autobiographical book. And so we're kind of guessing that, you know, it seemed like a much more popular disease, or, you know, many people had people that they knew that had gone through that or died from scarlet fever in the recent past. And so it seemed kind of like an almost poetic way of making Mary go blind. Because, oh, and also Little Women and Frankenstein had mentioned scarlet fever as well. And those were, you know, predecessors to the Little House on the Prairie books. So I'm guessing that that could have also influenced Laura in her writing.
I don't know. Anything else that people should know about this study or the books or anything?
I think it's still a good book for kids to read. Because there's been a lot of kids along the way that we've heard about that come home and tell their parents, Mom, you can go blind from scarlet fever. And Beth just eats that stuff up. She's like, we need to tell them that that's not what it was.
You're only 6 months in to med school. You know, what was it like just kicking it off with this study that's going to be published? And have you ever had any of your research published before?
Not when I'm the first author. This has been a really big paper for me. I had one other minor thing published from my senior individualized project at Kalamazoo that we all have to do. And so that got published in like Inflammation or something. But that was more like mice research, that kind of thing. But no, this has been really exciting. It's been really fun to have people come up to me on campus at University of Colorado and say, congratulations, I heard you on like NPR, all this stuff. And I'm just thinking, I'm kind of embarrassed. But, you know, it's been really exciting to have people be interested in it and just have that connection to all these people that are interested in Little House on the Prairie.
So what do you think that you want to do with your med degree when, you know, after it's all done? I'm sure you got a long way, but...
Yeah, I have a few years to decide, but I do really like pediatrics. University of Michigan was a really good experience for me with that. But I also like emergency medicine and internal medicine.
Great. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.